Welcome to the IonaHoops.com podcast with your host, Guy Filotico.
Hey there, Gale Nation. It's season 4, episode 9 of the IonaHoops.com podcast, and it's been sort of an uneven ride for our beloved Gales, just as I told you since April that it would be. I've talked to a lot of you in person, a lot of you through DMs, a lot of you through public mainstream social media, and I'm telling you, stay the course here, Gale fans. This whole thing to me feels a lot like some of the Tim Clueis years, where you looked at the team in November and just said, hey, it's just not going to happen for us this year. And then you look back in March and the Gales won another MAC tournament. It just feels similar to me. Remember, some of Tim's teams had a lot of turnover, and when that happens, it's tough to find your footing early on. And that issue Clueis endured is on steroids here for Tobin Anderson, given it's year one with an entire roster of players new to his system. Speaking of new, how about some new Iona Iotas?
Iona Iotas.
Much like the men's team, the Iona Lady Gales are a work in progress. But they're getting there. Iona picked up its first road win of the season earlier this week at Wagner, 67-55. This one felt like one of those turn-the-corner type wins with a combination of balanced scoring, great three-point shooting, and consistent solid defense. Juniors Ella Fajardo and Judith Gomez each had 11. Fajardo also had 7 assists. Grad forward Sierra D'Angelo added 10 points and 5 assists. And 6'5 sophomore center Allie Carmen put up a career-high 10 points as the Gales shot 56% overall and 42% from 3 while holding Wagner to just 34% overall. Iona returns the action at Providence today and at Hofstra on Thursday. And then on Sunday, December 10th, a heads up, with the Iona men hosting St. Francis that day at 5 p.m., the Iona women host Sacred Heart at noon that day. So come on down and spend the day in New Rochelle with both teams.
Iona, Iotas.
Did y'all catch that free episode of Tobin Time? Sure hope so, because you're not going to have access to the next ep unless you become a contributor to the Gales Nation NIL Collective. Tobin talked a bit more candidly about the Gulf Coast Showcase, about the MAC schedule, and even spent a few minutes giving his take on next year's freshman class. Hell, he even cursed once. Even my podcast won't have that sort of access to Tobin on the regular, so become a contributor and don't miss out on the next episode of Tobin Time, coming soon. All right, let's get to the recaps. Let's face it, we all knew traveling to play number 18 Colorado just a couple days removed from a 3-game set in Florida was not going to be a walk in the park. And while the end result in an 85-68 defeat to the Buffs certainly reflects that, the road to that final margin was on the interesting side. This one was indeed a game for a half. Despite being outshot and out-rebounded, Iona even managed to briefly snag the lead with about 5 minutes to go in the first half before settling for a 5-point deficit at the break. But the Buffs controlled things the second half. Whether it was tired legs, the mile-high air, or just good adjustments by a top 25 team, Iona could not keep pace and fell by 17. Some things to like in this one, though. Greg Gordon was super effective, 19 points and 8 of 13 shooting, even made a 3. And Adon Tritu, also solid 18 points. Iona was without Joel Brown in this one. If you remember the Buffalo game, he fell on his shoulder and came out of the game for a bit before returning. Well, that shoulder kept him out of this one. So Jeremiah quickly stepped up with 11 points. How about Dylan Saunders? The 18-year-old may not be physically ready to be a factor on defense just yet, but there's no doubt he can shoot it, going 3-for-3 from 3 for a 9-point effort. Other Gales not so lucky. Wazapanzo made just 1 of 5 threes on the day for a 3-point game. Gene Aaron Gurd managed some free throws, but was just 1 of 9 from the field, 6 points. Isaac Bryce did have a dunk on the press break. That's it for the Gales offense. The D struggled, allowing 61% shooting overall, 35% from three, 22 fouls committed by the Gales as well. So this game was what it was. Iona pressed all game. Everyone who dressed played, and the effort was there, but not enough to overtake an opponent of this magnitude at this time. Unfortunately, the same cannot be said for our home game earlier this week against Marist, the MAC opener. This game was a total foul fest, and save for a couple spurts here and there, we just weren't ready for what the Foxes were giving. In short, we got dunned, John Dunn every now and then works some defensive magic on opponent, and here the Gaels were victims. The Foxes beat Iona 68-64 on a home floor, and a whole lot of fans got comfortable on the ledge afterward. Again, this game was a total mess. Both teams shot poorly. The refs stole the show as the teams combined for 83 free throws. Neither team really made them at all in the first half. Marist did in the second, though. I would say the only two guys who showed out, well, for the most part, were our two point guards. Joel Brown had 13 points on 5 of 9 shooting. He even made 3 of 4 from the line, which percentage-wise was higher than just about everybody else that played. And the guy coming in with the rep of not being the good free throw shooter made 3 of 4. Brown also had 6 rebounds and 6 assists against 1 turnover on a day where Iona committed 19 turnovers. Freshman Jeremiah Quigley also continuing to impress. He scored 10 points, made all 4 of his free throw attempts. And, you know, Greg Gorton had a good game as well. He scored 14, had 7 boards, 2 blocks. Did struggle from the line, 6 of 12. So hopefully he will improve on that. Don Tritu finished with 14. But he took the scenic route to get there. Just 2 of 9 from the floor, 9 of 17 from the line. Team high 7 turnovers. It's a game he's going to want to forget. The Gaels made just 2 of 14 threes in the game. Wesa Panzo made only 1 of 6. Dylan Saunders, 0 of 4. So just an awful day for the Gaels on the offensive end. The defense fouled a whole lot in this one, which has been a theme for the squad, but only made worse by these particular whistle-happy refs. The numbers on D were generally good on the whole. Maris shot only 41% overall, 27% from 3, and they turned it over 19 times. Between the incessant fouling and the turnovers, this was an ugly game. One wonderful opening game for the Mac, which is starting to feel destined for its worst season ever, perhaps, with a Dayton trip just starting to feel pretty comfortable at the moment for the champion.
Anyway, here's a couple of brief comments from Tobin on the loss.
I told the guys every conference game is going to be like this. It's going to be a dogfight. You know, we have to get better. And I'm frustrated with where we're at, but there's, you know, I told the guys, like, there's, we got to come out fighting. That's all there is to it. I mean, you can take all the expectations and pulls and all that stuff, and we're not as feisty as we should be right now. So I got to do a better job. We all got to do a better job. So disappointed with the loss. Not so much a loss. Like, if you lose, I didn't like how we played, to be honest. I didn't like how we played it. Like, JB will vouch for that as well. I mean, I don't think I like how we reacted. I thought we blinked. I thought we were bothered by things, bothered by referees, bothered by stuff. And the reality was Maris didn't blink. Maris kept coming. They played well, and they outplayed us in the second half. And, you know, there's a lot of season to go. I mean, there's tons of season to go. So they're not an ounce of us feeling sorry for ourselves. There better not be, or we got to find a way out of this. You know, we created this ourselves. We got to find a way out of this. But, like, well, listen, credit to Maris. Maris is well coached, good team, coming with a chip on his shoulder. Thought they played well. Thought they made free throws the second half. Thought Collins played very well. I didn't see the box score for the most part. Thought he played very well. But this team is a lot better than we're playing, and we got to start playing better.
Last night, Friday, December 1st, was Tobin's birthday, and Wesa Panzo brought the gifts, big time, in the form of 7 threes. His 23 paced a much-improved Gaels unit from what we saw versus Marist 2 days prior, as Iona led Fairfield by as many as 18 before wrapping up Tobin's present in the form of a 78-67 victory that squared the Gaels at 1-1 in MAC play. 6 of Panzo's threes came in the second half as Iona blew it open. The Iona offense looked better in that there was a lot more motion in Tobin's motion offense, to the tune of 17 assists. Still 15 turnovers, but hey, a work in progress. In all, Iona made 10 of 18 from 3, and even hit 14 of 20 from the line, led by, quite frankly, the team's best free throw shooter, without question, Jeremiah Quigley, who went 8 of 8 from the line. The D was good as well. Fairfield shot 43% overall, honestly made some threes in garbage time that got them to 31% from deep. And they had 17 turnovers. And importantly, Iona's defense was much improved in terms of fouling. For the game, the team committed 17 total. Most of those were in the first half. Don Tritu fared better today than Marist for sure. 12 points on 5 of 8 shooting, 2 of 3 from 3, also had 6 rebounds and 7 assists. Complete effort there. Quigley had the 8 free throws that I mentioned. Joel Brown had 8 points, 4 rebounds, and 4 assists. Greg Gordon had 8 and 6. Sultan Al-Awal, a very physical performance from him, finished with 7 and 5, really a big factor in the second half. A much better performance for the Gales, top to bottom, and just in time with a slew of tough games throughout December. Here's Penn Tobin on the win.
Hey, guys, played well. Guys, was good. Good to get that win. Any road conference win is huge, especially as we move forward building this thing. You know, I mean, there's we'll get better, you know? So I was happy to see how he shared the ball tonight and play. That's been a big problem. I mean, we just didn't share the ball against Marist at all. Whatever else happened, we had 19 turnovers. We still had 15 tonight. That's still an issue. But, like, at least we passed the ball and shared the ball and played together and played unselfishly.
Why was it so much better tonight?
I mean, we spent 2 days. I mean, it's been a long 48. Since Marist, it was a long 48 hours, you know? We just, you know, and that's part of the growing pains, but it's been slower. I mean, to be honest, it's been slower than I thought it would be. It really has been. I mean, maybe my expectations are too high, but like it's been slow, you know. And I think sharing the ball is something we can all do all the time. So when the ball moves, you know, the scoreboard moves. It's just as simple as that. And when the ball moved tonight, which was great. And plus, it's you play better defense, you play everything gets better when you touch the ball. There was possessions against Marist where he came down the floor and Wesley didn't touch the ball for 5-6 in a row. Like, I'm not talking about shooting. He didn't touch the ball. So I was addressed pretty harshly the last 48 hours, and I thought our guys responded well. You know? We still looked a little tentative the first half. We're still, you know, it's like you can't play that way, but we're going to get better. You know? I like the fact we're playing a good Hofstra team on Wednesday. Like, oh, let's go play a great team. That's what I'm saying. Let's go play a great team and see what happens, because – you know, we got to get better. We have to get better. That's all there is to it. And so, but it was good tonight. Good one.
And speaking of those upcoming games, let's look ahead to upcoming non-conference showdowns against Hofstra and St. Francis.
It's not often that I get an up-close-and-personal chance to preview one of our non-conference opponents, but with Hofstra, here we are. The Pride lost at home to a really good Princeton team to open the season, and they also lost at GW before traveling with me to the Gulf Coast Showcase Thanksgiving week. And when Iona was trying to find itself in escaping Florida with 7th place, Hofstra was too busy winning the whole damn thing. Like us, they smoked Buffalo. That's how they started off their tournament. It then took down a solid Wright State team in the semis, and then really in a great and enjoyable game in the final, edged High Point, which of course beat Iona by double figures, by 5 in overtime. So that title game was highlighted by just an amazing performance by the Pride's biggest star, Tyler Thomas. After popping for 30 against Wright State in the semis, he scored every way imaginable in putting up 40 points against High Point. Oh, by the way, the 6'3 grad guard also had 8 rebounds and 5 assists. So he's a superstar. For the year, he's averaging 25 points, 5 boards, 3 assists per game. He's got to be the focal point of our defensive efforts when we play these guys. I don't know what we're going to have to do to survive him. But they do have other weapons. Most of them will be Darlingstone Dunbar. He's averaging 19 and 5, so he's no slouch either. And he's a 6'8 junior. Who else do they have? Well, they've got junior 6-foot guard Jaquan Carlos. He's averaging 11 points, 5 rebounds, 6.5 assists a game. So, yep, just another stud. They're not particularly deep after their starting 5. At the center position, they are going with a familiar platoon here with a bit of a Mac flavor. Canisius transfer Jocko Fritz, if you remember him. He's averaging about 5 and 5 for them as their starting center. You're going to remember him as kind of a poor man's Dylan Van Eyck. Fritz's platoon mate is none other than Silas Sunday. The former Gale is seeing about 12 minutes a game. Modest numbers, averaging 4 and 4, but he's effective and a great counter to what to what Jocko Fritz brings. Oh, yeah, this podcast. I love it. Anyway, so Hofstra scores points. They make threes. They do something that really might be a major problem for us given our style play. They make free throws. They hit it 80% as a team. Fantastic. What do they do poorly? Well, thankfully, they don't get to the line that often. At least they haven't up until what happens when we play them. They're so-so defensively at best. And they foul a lot. which could be interesting for us as well. Again, they don't have very much depth. So if you can find a way to slow down those starters and get those guards in foul trouble, you might be in business. Thomas, though, in fact, he won't come out of the game at all unless he does get in foul trouble. He basically plays 40 minutes. So our guy he's guarding is going to need to be aggressive and make him work on that end of the floor. So this game is a home game for us, and we always want to protect our home floor. But at best, this game is going to be a pick'em. And as a matter of fact, Hofstra will probably come in as a favorite. And it's, this game, though, is going to want to really show us what kind of growth we really had as a club, given how things have gone. This is the toughest home game of the season. And if we can find a way to win this one, it bodes pretty well for the rest of the way as we go. This figures to be a higher scoring affair than we're used to seeing around here these days. And the opponent is going to have the best player on the floor. So a real test to see where we're at. Going from Hofstra to St. Francis, well, what can you say? The Red Flash are just not a good team. And even in the NEC, they're not going to win a bunch of games. This team would almost certainly be near the very bottom of the MAC, if not the very bottom, which is saying something given how Siena's looked thus far. Sorry, couldn't resist. But this is a game to fix whatever's not working for us, I hope, and get a dub before we settle in for a fun mix of quality non-conference opponents to close out the year. I mean, they've just struggled mightily this year. They just picked up their only Division I win at Lehigh by one. We don't want to take anyone for granted around here, but this is a game we should win, and perhaps even comfortably. They don't do anything well statistically on either end of the floor. They have only one double-figure scorer, 6'5 sophomore guard Cam Gregory at 11.5 per game. They're super young, all freshmen and sophomores. They were absolutely rated by the portal, and their head coach didn't want to recruit transfers, so they might be the youngest team in the country. There's really, really not much else to say here. It's a game for us to work on things. Let's put them away early and give our young guys a chance to get some minutes as well. And with those previews noted, let's welcome in Joe Budzelic, publisher of the College Hoops blog Stretching the Floor, which has a nice Northeast mid-major slant for sure. Joe did a bunch of previews before the season tipped off, including Hofstra and St. Francis, and we welcome him now. So we're ready to preview Hofstra and St. Francis, and I have Joe Budzelic from Stretching the Floor with us. Before I get into bringing Joe on and talking about it, I do have a funny story, because Joe and I never met until last night at the Fairfield game. And, well, they put us at press row together, and we didn't know each other, and we're DMing each other on Twitter saying, hey, where are you sitting? I don't know, where are you sitting? Oh, I'm at this, you know, the media table, the one that's kind of a fold-out. And I look at him, I'm like, you're Joe, aren't you? So yeah, not the most impressive meeting of the minds, but we definitely had our moment there. Joe, it was great to meet you last night and have you on again to talk about the pod. So how are you?
Good. It was great meeting you yesterday. It the way you described it vaguely sounds like a very strange, like a Hallmark classic, like movie, like meeting in a public. But yeah, it was great meeting you. We kind of had an all-star crew sitting together Friday night at Mahoney Arena. It was a beautiful night. It was overall ended up being a good game. So we had a fun time last night.
We did. We had Jim Mazzano from College Hoops chat with us. We also had Pete Janney from who does his Riverdale Press and Daily Dose of Hoops, and probably something else that I'm forgetting. But yeah, we had all four of us plopped together in one area. So it was fun to go back and forth, and pretty much we owned the press conference as well. So it was good. Well, while we're on that, your quick impressions of last night's Iona Fairfield game.
I mean, obviously, like, Wezza was on fire. He scored 7 3-pointers. When we were talking to Coach Casey at the end of the game, he was mentioning how Fairfield played pretty good deep, but then Wezza was just on fire. They were kind of messing up a couple switches on him, for sure. I remember you and I were chatting during the game. It seems like, let me backtrack a bit, like a Tobin Anderson coach team. It's dynamic. They have their press and they have their motion. So early in the season, it's a brand new roster of who's healthy. And it kind of seems like everyone's going through the motions early on in the season. But I feel like by the end of the second half, especially as the lead was starting to get a little bit wider. You saw a little bit more comfort. They didn't seem like they were overthinking too much. I think Tobin had a quote at the presser saying that fast minds equals slow feet or something like that. So they seemed to be thinking a lot more naturally. But yeah, it was a slow start. Similar, we were worried that it was going to be another Marist game, but ended up looking good. They were dominating the offensive boards for sure. I remember Coach Casey was not too happy with Fairfield's defensive rebounding, and that's obviously to the credit to Iona's rotation last night. And the depth was impressive as well. 10 guys played 10 minutes or more, which is impressive. So, yeah. You know, it's progress from Wednesday.
Yes.
For sure.
And you know, I've been saying this since April, pretty much on this podcast, that this team is going to be uneven kind of for a while. And we're definitely seeing that. Where, I mean, even the way they performed against Colorado was probably better than they played last night. And definitely the way they played against Marist. They're just going to be uneven for a bit, trying to find their place. And then they're going to have to do it again when Oz comes back. Your thoughts on the Gales thus far this year, from the first game against Charleston, which gave everybody such great optimism, and then and then beyond.
I think a big reason why Iona fans should be excited is the projectability of the team. I'm looking at the roster right now. There's three freshmen getting regular minutes, or my apologies, four freshmen getting regular minutes. It could only go up because obviously Oz isn't playing. The freshmen are playing really well. I remember we were chatting last night. Quigley doesn't play like a freshman.
Yeah.
He has a poise. He has a grittiness. He's a tough kid. Like, in what's incredible, he was an FDU commit before switching over to Iona. And he's playing really well, 20 plus minutes a game. And if he was in the Northeast Conference right now, he'd be dominating that conference. And obviously, you know, Dylan looks good in back minutes. I was pretty happy with Williams also. He's someone I was pretty high on. He was my, outside of obviously the two big guard transfer pickups, he was my second favorite transfer coming in. He had a very efficient game down in Southern, really versatile guy. Obviously, he's playing a bit of small ball five for Iona right now. The Mac's wide open, but if you're looking at how teams are playing now in December, and it's a short season, they're one of the few teams in the conference that right now we're seeing their floor. This is their floor. And it's the ceiling is what's giving them the title aspirations that I feel like fans should be excited about for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're going to see that they're going with the inconsistency. It's part of having also much youth being part of the regular rotation. You're seeing games where Quigley couldn't buy a shot last night, but then did other things though. He handled the ball pretty well. He didn't throw the ball over the gym. He made 8 of 8 from the line. And then, you know, people like Aaron Gurren sometimes are a little more aggressive on offense than others. And you want to say, always be aggressive. Same thing with Adewale. But that comes with the youth, and the veterans are in a different spot too, in that neither one was the man on their team before. They were always kind of the second or third or maybe even fourth option on their previous teams. So now they're being, you know, so even in a case like Tritu, where I think he struggled a bit, is that he is the primary weapon on the offense in terms of, like, he's the guy they're all looking to. All right, the shot clock's running down, Udon, go save us. So we're seeing a little bit of that too. I think these guys are still kids, even though they've been around the block a bit, and they have to learn new things. They're learning a new system. They're learning a new role. So it's going to take some time to settle in. And again, it's all going to shift again a little bit when Oz is back. So patience has to be there. You know, the Mac is going to slowly get better as this year goes on, but there are not that many good teams. So there's opportunity for this team to really get a chance to grow. Your thoughts on the Mac in general, about what you've seen thus far? I know it's very early, but anybody surprising you?
I mean, my easiest surprise of the season so far is Manhattan. Obviously, in the offseason, I was expecting Clayton and then McLean to start. Obviously, McLean's been slowly coming back from his injury, and Clayton hasn't gotten his waiver yet. So Coach Gell is playing mostly underclassmen, and they look really good. They had a big overtime win last night over Mount St. Mary's. I, to be honest, entering the season, I probably had him bottom two in the league. But I wouldn't be shocked if they are in the top half by the end of the season. They're just, and what's exciting about that program is even if the veterans can't play as much this season, and I know Rumpel's obviously out for the year, they're going to keep growing. And like, it's just, that'll be an exciting program to follow for the next couple of years with all the underclassmen that they're playing. Quinnipiac, I was pretty high on entering the year. I still think they'll be good. The last two off seasons, they've really spent a lot of portal currency on building their front court. I think Richie Springs is a perfect fit for Quinnipiac and the MAC for how quick they like to play. He's basically like a stretch five, essentially. He's probably going to play the four with Otieno playing the center. But he's got potential once he gets more minutes. There's very few teams that I don't think will do very well. I mentioned Manhattan's youth. Obviously, Siena is super young, and they've been having some injury issues as well. Niagara's always been solid. I can't count out a Greg Paulus coach team anymore because they've been at least average every year that he's been there. I was pretty high on Ryder entering the year.
I think everybody went.
They're gonna
I think everybody's a little surprised, but you know, not that they didn't do so well against that non-conference schedule that they put together, which was brutal, but yeah. Even in a game like last night, they just can't seem to score the ball the way everybody thought they were going to.
Yeah, I thought the Weeks brothers would dominate right away. Obviously TJ was pretty pretty productive at UMass, and his brother was kind of like a, if you had a JUCO fantasy league, he'd be a first round pick. He was just in the stat sheet. But obviously, like, we see it with Greg Gordon, we see it with Jasper Floyd. These JUCO kids, it's a different environment where in JUCO they rely on their ability and their athleticism, where there's definitely a lot more process behind what you have to do on offense with a MAC. So it's wide open. It'll be fun. Obviously, I'm expecting chaos in Atlantic City. I know people are down on the talent level in the conference, especially with the portal and NIL and all that stuff, but yeah. I try to set that aside. To me, that doesn't matter right now. And as we could see from last night, anything could happen in any game. Anything could happen. So it's going to be a fun season to see what happens. I still think I'm a fan. And this isn't like a bias or a cockiness or whatever. Like, I think they collectively should feel that Iona has the strongest ceiling on March for sure.
Okay. Well, and we have another month to work on that basically before the MAC play returns again. And again, hopefully Oz is back by then as well. Iona's got a brutal non-conference slate the rest of this month for the most part. We're going to talk about Hofstra and St. Francis today. And then after that was St. Joe's, it's Colgate. There's Harvard. I mean, that's this is a real test for a team that's still trying to figure some stuff out, and Oz won't exactly come back and be the Oz we saw like in last March either. So it could be a very bumpy December, but it should help us by January. And we started all pretty fast. I mean, we got these two MAC games out of the way, and now we got a few days off to get ready for a Hofstra team that we both know quite a bit about. I got to see them up close and personal down in Florida for 3 days. And you had to spend some good amount of time on them in the preseason, working on previews and whatnot. What have you seen from Hofstra? How impressed are you with them? And how tough a game is that for Iona?
It's going to be tough, for sure. So it's Speedy Claxton's third year back in Hempstead. I was excited when he was hired. They've had a lot of consistency of course they lose stars every year, but the way that they share the ball and the way that they shoot the ball, they always have pieces that could just soar 30 in a game. I'm just looking at their numbers from the 3 years that Speedy's been there. They're just an elite shooting team. They move the ball really nicely. I know last night we were talking about their updated front court. I mean, their starting lineup has five guys who could pass, shoot, and score. So I'm imagining Iona's press isn't really going to phase him. I don't think so, because, you know, Jaco Fritz was the best passing big in the MAC last year. Now he's your starting center. He could obviously shoot a three. I go to a lot of Sacred Heart games, so I've been following Tyler Thomas's game for a while, and he was fantastic at Sacred Heart. He grew every year. He is vastly exceeding my expectations at Hofstra. He's a good player. I knew he was a good player going in. I thought he'd be at least a solid scorer for them. But every year he's been growing with his game. You could argue he's the best player in the CAA right now. Yeah, Hofstra, they don't play a lot of players. They play basically just eight guys. Their starters get like 30 minutes. It'll be exciting to see like the Thunder and Lightning between Dako Fritz as the Lightning and then the Thunder of Sela Sunday. Obviously, Iona fans are very familiar with him. He's a very poised tactician under the basket, just very soft hands. And obviously surrounded by really good passers and really offensively aware players is mm-hmm. only going to help his game entering his sophomore year. So I'm expecting a double digit win for Hofstra. I would say a victory for the Gales in that if they were to not win that game, if they could neutralize one of Hofstra's biggest scorers, whether it's Thomas, Dubar, or Carlos, I would take that as a win. Like, for example, consistent defensive play against Carlos, who's their point guard, would be a win as well. He's prone to turnovers. So I did mention that I feel like they would get out of the press pretty well. He's one guy. He's not a big scorer. He averages like 11 and a half a game, but he's still young. And I feel like if they could neutralize one of their top three scorers, that would be a win for sure. And then just, I think just more offensive consistency from Iona would be a win. We were talking yesterday that they still look like they're learning. And Hofstra is a stronger offensive team than a defensive team. So, and I thought Fairfield played pretty tough last night. So some more growth on the offensive end, especially in the half court, it would be something that we should be looking for on Wednesday.
Yeah, and you know, you start to say, well, okay, what an Iona win look like? You know, what would they need to do? And I keep thinking, you know, geez, I can't even see them keeping Hofstra under 90. But that would be the first step, finding just enough defense to slow them down a bit. And then, you know, Iona's shown the ability to get hot offensively, to make threes. And again, like you said, Hofstra's not a great defensive team. So if we can get some turnovers when Hofstra's not making shots, if we can be turning them over a bit, you know, if we, you know, you get Panzo getting hot, you get Tritu getting hot, you know, this could be a game where Iona wins, you know, 88-86. The fear I have in a game like that, though, is that the best player on the floor is Thomas. And when you have those kind of games where it goes down to like the last couple of possessions, who's going to make the play for Iona? Who's going to make the play for Hofstra? You know, that worries me, too. So it's almost one of those games Iona needs to win by 8 or 9, not 2 or 3. To win. And it's going to be interesting. You know, Iona's going to need to play its best defensive game of the year to win this game, in my mind.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun to see how Joel Brown guards Thomas. I think he has a ton of defensive potential. He's strong. He's long. Obviously, he's familiar with Pac-12 play, so he's played against tons of talented guards. So that's one defensive matchup that I'd be looking forward to as well. But yeah, I think you summed it up perfectly for Wednesday's game.
Yeah, I mean, and Hofstra really, I mean, they're just scratching the surface. I was so impressed with Thomas down in Florida, just making big shot after big shot. And again, they beat a team that handled Iona pretty easily in High Point in what was a great final in that tournament, in overtime game. So yeah, I have concerns, but I can see if Iona does certain things, it could be a fun one. You know, it'll show us a lot about how much Iona's grown. So we'll see. It's a great stepping stone for sure for them to see if they can elevate their game to that level for sure. Now we take a step back though, and regardless of what happens against Hofstra, the next game I won't call it a breather. I don't think that's respectful, but St. Francis is super young. They haven't done a whole lot in terms of good basketball this year, but they are coming off their first win. So tell me about St. Francis and what Iona fans can expect there.
They're the fifth lowest team nationally in D1 experience. So Rob Krimmel, it's his 12th year, in St. Francis. And he's a proponent of the anti-portal movement. He loves developing players. They added one transfer this year, but in general, he just loves developing talent. I see a lot of parallels between like St. Bonaventure or like a Gonzaga, where it's kind of like a basketball oasis in the middle of Pennsylvania where you go there to play basketball. So the guys on his team are basketball hungry. They're young, similar to Siena. They're playing entirely with underclassmen right now. So expect they'll be fresh for sure. So obviously the press, they're inexperienced, but they won't be tired because I wouldn't be shocked if they guys played 20 minutes for St. Francis in that game. But they're poor shooting. So far, they're shooting like 22% from three. Defensively, now keep in mind these stats are definitely with a grain of salt considering all the non-D1 teams that they've played. But this year, it looks like their perimeter D is looking pretty decently. Part of that is due to the fact that they have a lot of bigger guards playing all up and down the lineup. Like I'm looking at their starting lineup right now. I see 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". So there's a few smaller guards, but in general, it's one of the more larger low major teams out there. I think it's a good experience for Iona to just continue to work on the intricacies of a well-coached Tobin Anderson offense in terms of the motion and the press. They're going to be playing under classmen. So just keep getting aggressive with that press and just keep making life miserable. Like that's a game where if Iona wins big, just keep winning big. You know what I mean? Like that's not a game to get, you know, your freshman more minutes just because you're up by a lot. If it gets to that level, I would say that's a game where you just kind of keep building those routines and building that foundation of what they could apply for later in the non-conference schedule and entering the MAC. For sure. Play super slow, St. Francis. So it's Iona should get 70 points. I think it's an opportunity to generate a lot of turnovers in the press and to practice their motion offense against a team with size but with not a lot of experience.
My mind, the only way this becomes a dangerous game is if they really try to emulate what Marist did on defense, just in terms of disrupting flow, maybe even putting us on the line more than you know, intentionally almost putting us on the line a lot just to see what we can do. Because we talked about this last night, the freshmen are the best free throw shooters on the team and the older guys don't make them. So, you know, you see Tretu and Gordon and those guys come out there. Why not, you know, hack a gale, you know, and just see if you can hang around doing that and make the game as ugly as humanly possible. I mean, that's kind of what I would do if I were in his situation a little bit. And maybe that's not the best in terms of improving your basketball team, but it's a way to win games. This is the time to try some stuff. So yeah, in that regard, it could be a dangerous game. It's also right before the holidays. There could be that letdown. The kids want to take a break, go home, do whatever they're going to do. You know, it's one of those kind of weird games. The fans probably won't turn out for it. You know, there could be a lot of that kind of stuff where, you know, it's only 1,000 fans in the gym or something. And, you know, it's come out a little flat and you look up at the first media and it's, you know, 9-2 St. Francis. Everybody's like, oh my God, what's happening? How are we this bad? So it's almost one of those games you want to drop the hammer real early and set the tone for the way the day's going to go.
You did mention hack a gale. My only argument against that would be like if you look at Coach Krimmel's just like record statistically, one pretty consistent thing is they've ranked I think 7 out of his 12 years as head coach top 65 nationally in preventing free throw rate. So that means I see that as they don't foul a lot. They prevent teams from penetrating, I guess. And they've actually had two seasons where they ranked nationally in the top 4 of that. So when they play defense, they don't foul a lot, statistically speaking. Not saying that's their strategy would change against Iona, because I do agree with you that that does have some benefits, especially with Brown still working on his free throws for sure. It's an opportunity to... My hope for Iona fans, it's an opportunity for them to rejoice in a dominant win, because Iona hasn't had that. Obviously, that's to the credit of Tobin and his staff for having a really strong non-conference schedule, and that's only going to help them for MAC play. But I think definitely, as you mentioned, a lot of strong teams like booking the soft belly of the soft underbelly of their non-conference right around Christmas time for sure. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at high majors, the week of Christmas and the week before Christmas, you don't see a lot of high profile non-conference games for power five teams. And same could be said for Iona as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, Joe, I want to say it was great to meet you again last night. It was great to have you on, first time on the IonaHoops.com podcast. You know, you've got a lot of fans in among Gale Nation. You met a couple of them last night, I believe. again, appreciate you coming on and dropping some knowledge with us, and we will catch up with you again down the line.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Guy.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks again to Joe Budzelic for appearing on the podcast and sharing his Iona and Mac thoughts with us. It's a marathon, not a sprint, Gale fans. So hang in there as this team continues to improve. And this podcast will be there every step of the way. Keep the faith and go Gales.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the IonaHoops.com podcast. This podcast is a production of IonaHoops.com with publisher Guy Filotico. The opinions shared during this podcast are those of Guy Filotico, IonaHoops.com, and any featured guests. This podcast is not affiliated with Iona University Athletics or the university itself. Thank you for supporting IonaHoops.com.